From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we present a previously recorded episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank's guest is Dr. D.K. Matthews, author of the cover article in the current issue of the Christian Research Journal, The Word Crisis That Threatens to Undo Western Civilization. Here now is Hank Hanegraaff.
And welcome to another edition of Hank Unplugged. This is the podcast that is committed to bringing you the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. And today we have a very special episode of Hank Unplugged. My guest today is Douglas K. Matthews. Douglas is a very, very interesting person who got his PhD from Baylor University. He's also an incredible author, among many other things. He has written a profound book titled A Theology of Cross and Kingdom. And the book that we are particularly interested in terms of this podcast, a book titled Seduced. The subtitle is intriguing. Shameless Spin, Weaponized Words, Polarization, Tribalism, and the Impending Disintegration of Faith and Culture. I wrote an endorsement for this very significant book in which I say we're in the midst of a seismic semantic revolution in which words are being systematically hijacked by a global coup d'etat, a coup d'etat determined to overthrow the Judeo-Christian foundations of Western culture and civilization. In Seduced, Douglas K. Matthews offers a remarkably thorough and much-needed antidote to what may well be the ultimate battle for the future. This is a must-read, and indeed it is, because as Douglas points out, the seductive banishment of biblical and Judeo-Christian influence from the entire American lexicon has far more profound and long-standing implications and consequences for the health of faith communities, for culture, for law, for civilization, than any other cultural loss or trend. With that, I want to bring to the fore our guest for today, Douglas Matthews. Hi, Doug.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be with you. I've listened to you for a long time, Hank, and most every night when I drive home from work.
Well, thank you so much. I'm privileged to have a listener like you, that is for sure. Your book, 450 pages. I mean, I was asking myself the question before I started the podcast, how can a word crisis warrant the cover story of the Christian Research Journal? How can the crisis of word and the fragmentation of civilization warrant a book that's 450 pages long, titled Seduced? How can a word crisis warrant an article by yours truly? I wrote this in the current edition of the Christian Research Journal on the basis of reading your article, and I titled it Christians Caught in the Crosshairs of a Virulent Linguistic Pandemic. So, how is it that this word crisis is so significant, not only for a few years here and there, but for the whole health and well-being of Western civilization?
Yeah, great question. I've had a number of interactions about the article and the book, and it seems to me you had your finger on the pulse as well as anybody, Hank, with what we were trying to get at here. If you had the book in front of you, you would see there are a whole bunch of words on the front of the book. And in some ways, that's trying to give the answer. And then there's an image of a key. What I'm trying to argue, or my best read of our cultural situation, the reason you can write a 400-plus page book on words is because every word, every significant word is being redefined. And the intent, whether it's conscious or not, is to redefine the entire way we speak and think, the way we use terms, or as I put it, the entire American lexicon, so that what we once knew as an American experiment, influenced by Judeo-Christian and, let's be honest, some Enlightenment values, moves to a new type of experiment with different agendas. Since you're familiar with the Canterbury Trail in theology, you're probably a little bit familiar with John Wesley. John Wesley used to talk a lot about the root and the fruit of sin. And I'm as concerned as anybody about some of the cultural developments, even this past week with the Supreme Court. But what I'm suggesting is people of the words, the personal world, the revealed word, the words of Scripture, that is the nexus of how God shapes cultures and civilizations. And as our language, our definitions, our terms have increasingly been replaced, like marriage, the Obergefell decision in 2015, as these terms have been redefined, it's redefining the future. It's redefining our culture. It's redefining our ethics. It's redefining how we live. And I think in some ways what we see with the pandemic and what's going on in our culture and civilization today, I'm not sure that the argument could be any more relevant.
Yeah, and particularly in what happened this week. I mean, it won't be this week for people listening into the podcast. It'll be a little bit in the rearview mirror. But let's talk about the implications for law. So I'll go back to your statement. You say the seductive banishment of biblical and Judeo-Christian influence from the entire American lexicon has far more profound and long-standing implications and consequences for the health of faith communities, culture, and then you say law. And I thought we ought to pause there for a moment and talk about the implications for law in Bostock versus Clayton, where you have Justice Neil Gorsuch, who updates the meaning of sex in the Civil Rights Act of 1964 to include sexual orientation and gender identity. And in doing that, opened Pandora's box. And not only that, but I think it's instructive to note that he contradicted his own contention, a contention that he made previously, that words should be interpreted as taking their ordinary, contemporary, common meaning. And in fact, he once said that if judges could freely invest old statutory terms with new meanings, we would risk amending legislation. And instead of being a judge, he becomes a legislator. So here we have a very contemporary situation where a word is redefined. And I think you could probably spell out better than anyone on the planet the consequences that one word being redefined will have for Western civilization.
Well, I'm not a lawyer, and I'm not the son of a lawyer, and I don't know Justice Alito, but I thought it was fascinating by connecting two cases, the 2015 case and the case this week, that Alito, even being a lawyer, when he was reflecting on what happened in 2015, he said, for today's majority, their interpretation has, quote, a distinctively postmodern meaning. Now, Hank, you've read the book. Our listeners probably haven't. I tend to prefer the term ultra-modern, kind of drawing upon some of the writings of Tom Oden, who talked about us living in an age of mod rot, where we are running on the fumes of modernism or modernity. But I thought it was fascinating that Alito actually used the postmodern interpretive scheme to explain what his fellow justices did on the court. And he goes on to say that they're conferring constitutional protections upon rights simply because they believe, and that I put in brackets, based on postmodern or ultramodern and post-Judeo-Christian assumptions, that it is fundamental. And so from the bench, since you aren't obligated to stick with the intention of the text and the context of the text, since you aren't obligated to work through the legislative process and change laws with which you do not agree with, you can therefore simply rule from the bench in a postmodern or an ultramodern word where everything is being redefined, including terms, and you can take marriage, which has a long history and tradition, particularly in the West, of being heterosexual and monogamous, and redefine it any way that you want. To me, that's the stage that was set that led to the decision this past week. So now you take that same ultramodern or postmodern interpretation and you apply it to human sexuality, which is a larger problem of the theology of the body. You apply that to human sexuality and you simply decree from the bench, not because the legislation meant that when it was originally passed, but because you have now determined that that was the real intent. If those individuals were alive today and they knew what we knew and they thought what we knew, and besides that, it's pretty hard to determine what anybody knows or thinks anyhow, and words are slippery. Therefore, let's just go ahead and advocate for our tribal sense of justice based on a 2020 perspective.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Dr. D.K. Matthews. Today, Christians are caught in the crosshairs of a virulent linguistic pandemic, a crisis in which words are now organically and systemically redefined. Post-truth critics, including candidates for the highest office in the land, routinely castigate those who stand in opposition to their redefinition of words. They are labeled intolerant, hateful, ignorant, and an imminent and existential threat to the noble quest for a progressive future. In the current issue of the Christian Research Journal, D.K. Matthews shows how redefining words and worldviews threatens to undo Western civilization. But there is a way forward. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles, equipping you to exercise truth and experience life. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. The question, "What do you mean by that?" may be the most important question one could ask today. In this relativistic post-truth age in which words are systemically redefined to undermine the Judeo-Christian foundations of Western civilization, Christians must discern the meaning of words and learn to counter and redeem semantic distortions. Other topics include faithful living through COVID-19, Irenaeus and Christian teaching, winning the fight for religious freedom, vocation and performance in T.S. Eliot's The Confidential Clerk, the beauty of worship, aesthetics and truth, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org.
We live in an age of increasingly militant secularism and scientism, an age in which science, reinforced by its stunning successes and unprecedented benefits in our quality of life, is increasingly the arbiter of what constitutes truth. But the question is, do the facts of science really suggest a world governed by blind chance, or do they ultimately point to purpose and design? Living Waters, a film by Illustra Media, explores Earth's astonishing underwater realm and shows how it's a realm where biological wonders reflect the highest levels of purpose and design. To receive your copy of Living Waters on DVD as our thank you for your support, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. Anyone who's been paying attention knows there's a war going on, not just on traditional morality, civility, and decency, but even more fundamentally on historic notions of truth. And the enemy isn't just the onslaught of fake news facilitated by a post-truth culture and turbocharged by growing legions of ideological spin doctors. No, the real enemies of truth range from postmodernist convictions that there is no objective truth to militant scientism that claims that only science can determine truth, and religion is little more than primitive superstitions. But CRI support team members are not waving a white flag of surrender. They're holding the fort by undergirding every one of Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping and life-changing outreaches 24/7. To learn how you can make a difference and enjoy all the benefits of support team membership, simply visit equip.org.
Let's rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and Dr. D.K. Matthews in their conversation.
So now you take that same ultramodern or postmodern interpretation and you apply that to human sexuality, and you simply decree from the bench, not because the legislation meant that when it was originally passed, but because you have now determined that that was the real intent. If those individuals were alive today and they knew what we knew and they thought what we knew, and besides that, it's pretty hard to determine what anybody knows or thinks anyhow, and words are slippery. Therefore, let's just go ahead and advocate for our tribal sense of justice based on a 2020 perspective. Now, I know that was a mouthful, Hank, but I'm sensing continuity between the two Supreme Court cases.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. In fact, in Obergefell, marriage was redefined with its own set of exclusions. So the exclusions were siblings and polygamous and underage and so forth. But what Anthony Kennedy did, it was amazing. He believed that marriage as historically defined fostered ill will and animosity, that anyone who embraces the historical definition of marriage does so out of hate or animus. And yet he made exclusions himself. But this gets back into the word crisis that you're talking about. Both cases, Bostock and Obergefell, both of them had very significant ramifications for our culture, one with respect to marriage, the other with respect to the definition of sex, removing it from its biological origins and then decoupling it from gender.
Absolutely. And if I may, I think your introduction to this issue, the Christian Research Journal, may have been the best little article in the whole thing. I loved what you said about every redefinition of marriage, including his own, excludes someone. And I think that's what people don't get. And I did talk about this quite a bit in the book. This myth of neutrality is really a smokescreen for moving from one tribal lord, so to speak, to another tribal lord. Now, in the American experiment consensus, we had some shared values that were hybridizing all kinds of things, from Montesquieu to Locke to the Judeo-Christian influence. We just had Great Awakening number one. We had a framework for a plumb line to make decisions and determinations and to define terms. In fact, in the American experiment, if you go back, you find the biblical influence on words and terms was pervasive, from cities to names of individuals like Abraham Lincoln to naming children. I mean, everything was influenced by that semantic context. And so we move up to the present time period, and what we've essentially done, we've gone from what you might call a Ten Commandments culture. And whenever you replace the Ten Commandments, you don't end up with nothing. You don't end up with neutrality. You end up with another Ten Commandments, or 20, or 50, or 100. And now we're living in a culture, whether it's the Supreme Court or some of the things going on in popular culture, or even some of the revolutionary groups that have gotten their hands involved in the protests, and they now are bringing in their 5 or their 10 or their 20 or their 30 commandments. But undergirding that are these powerful, spiritual, formative, generative words that change everything and define the future.
Where does logocentric reality begin? You write about this in your book and in the article as well, but talk about what logocentric reality means and how it originates with the creation of the world.
Yeah, amen. I had the privilege, or the, what shall we say, the burden of doing my master's thesis at Wheaton College Graduate School. And it was on Carl F. H. Henry. And as you know, he wrote, what was it, 6 volumes or something like that. And I remember one of my professors saying, this is great stuff, but nobody reads it. Nobody's ever going to read it because it was so deep. But I actually did. I read virtually all of his writings, including the 6 volumes, and then did my master's project on that. And I thought Henry did a good job. He's a philosopher and he's a theologian. He did a good job predicting the current crisis that we're in as well. But and very good at biblical scholarship and a journalist. I mean, he was the perfect good storm for a theologian who could tie things together. And I think he got it right that from the Christian perspective, we have this logos doctrine, this word doctrine. It runs throughout the Old Testament. It's kind of hidden, but it's the agent of creation. It's sometimes personified as wisdom in the Old Testament. And then it bursts onto the scene. And in the New Testament, in the Christ event, particularly reflected in John chapter 1, NRK, Ahan Logos, in the beginning was the Word. And then you have this beautiful passage in John 1:14, and the Word became flesh. And so what you have in Scripture is something that's not completely resolved, but it connects the agent of creation and the speaking into existence of the creation with language and words. And is it a surprise then that we're the people of the personal word that by the Spirit inspired the prophets and the apostles to give us the written word and to guide the very words that are to guide our lives and guide our ethos, or as James Smith might put it, to guide our loves, or Augustine might put it. Those words frame everything. They shape everything. And so when you talk about the word-centric or logocentric, you're talking about a culture and civilization that has been influenced, or James Smith talks about the law and culture of being bent by what O'Donovan refers to as the craters of the gospel. The whole idea that the government is not God is one of those craters of the gospel coming down through a long historical process to create an American experiment and other experiments where the government knows its proper place. And what is that proper place? And I'm working on a book on that right now. It's on bended knee. The king and the kingdoms know that their role, their function, their purpose is temporary. It's passing. It is not ultimate. And so it's within that context that Carl F. Henry made the strong argument that we had a crisis of word and truth and authority. And we were moving into the fragmentation of civilization because we were neglecting that norm. He didn't say this as much because he's a little bit rationalistic. We were neglecting that spiritual formed reality that comes from the word and comes from the words. And boy, are we seeing that played out in front of us today, where people can't even talk to each other because there's no longer a plumb line. There's no longer a shared consensus. People are might as well be speaking entirely different languages to each other. And hence, you have the tribalism and you have the conflict.
Yeah, I was just going to actually ask you to touch on that or elaborate on that, because here you have the inability of most Christians to communicate with modern culture because Christians and radical progressives inhabit alternate semantic universes. So we have our own language systems, and sometimes we use the same terminology, but we pour different meanings into the words. So we're using the same words or phrases, but we have entirely different concepts in mind.
Absolutely. And I mean, the one that everybody can get their teeth into all of the time, and particularly right now, is the term justice. That, you know, it's a classic example. When you approach justice from a tribalistic standpoint, it's very different than when you approach justice from the standpoint of the early American experiment, where human rights were grounded in inalienable God-given rights. It wasn't a social contract. Hey, you know, we'll give you justice. We'll give you human rights. We'll sign on a piece of paper and agree to some sort of transaction. It was the government was subject to God, and the laws in the country were to be subject to the law of God. And Hank, you know this, but the old concept from Rutherford of is the law king or is the king law? Lex, mm-hmm. Rex, Rex, Lex. And that is the framework within which the American experiment defined terms like justice and defined terms like human rights and defined terms like equality. Now, it was a neophyte experiment. They had a lot of kinks that had to be worked out. That's why you had the slavery debate that was going on during the birth of the American experiment. But they at least had a norm. That's the problem. There's a book, as you know, Hank, that's called, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where we are. That's where we are today. And so when you have these terms like justice, if Christians, I mean, you think about the mission field, for crying out loud, if you can't communicate with the culture and the language on the mission field, you're in trouble. We can't communicate a lot of times as evangelicals in the mission field of America because we don't understand when other people say compassion, when other people say justice, when other people say marriage, when other people say things like inclusion. Wow, that's a big one. How about multiculturalism? When people use these terms, they're bringing in an alternate semantic universe, and we're just not only not on the same page, we're not even in the same universe.
Well, we've run out of time for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Be sure to tune in again next time when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Dr. D.K. Matthews. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles, equipping believers to exercise truth and experience life. Topics in the current issue of the Christian Research Journal include repentance and prayer in a time of massive urban unrest and COVID-19, the word crisis that threatens to undo Western civilization, winning the fight for religious freedom. The second century theological warrior Irenaeus stands among the most relevant thinkers of our day, the beauty of worship, aesthetics and truth, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write to the Christian Research Institute at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28271. The preceding program was pre-recorded. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles, equipping you to exercise truth and experience life. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. The second century theological warrior Irenaeus stands among the most relevant thinkers for our own time. His reliance on the church's apostolic canon, creed, and clergy shows us a way beyond the interpretive anarchy of today's individualist approach to Christianity. Other topics include the word crisis that threatens to undo Western civilization, faithful living through COVID-19, winning the fight for religious freedom, the beauty of worship, aesthetics, and truth, vocation and performance in T.S. Eliot's The Confidential Clerk, atheism and the burden of proof, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org.